House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is Thursday, February 11th, 2016. Let me just go down this list.
Do you want to make an announcement?
Which one's that?
It's the elder abuse.
And that's not the one. House Bill 4013 will not be moving today, so that will essentially be gone for this session. We expect to see it back in 17. And House Bill 4045 will not be heard today, so that is gone as well. Open a hearing or work session on House Bill 4067. Representative Bueller, would you like to come up if you want?
And Chair Barker, members of the committee, you might remember that this is the whistleblower bill. A group was convened. They got together and did some very good work in short order. You now have the proposed -7 amendments before you. This bill is ready to go today with the -7 amendments.
Thank you, Chair Barker, and the rest of the committee. My name for the record is Representative Newt Bueller. I represent House District 54, which is most of the city of Bend. And if you recall, House Bill 4067 had a hearing a few days ago. We rapidly convened a work group of interested parties, and I'd like to thank Gail, who's here with me, who's the legislative counsel for the efforts, and we've come to agreement that all parties have endorsed. It's the -7 amendments that you'll see on OLIS. I'd like to thank also Arthur Towers and his colleagues, the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association, Susan Grabby at the State Bar, Scott Winkles of League of Cities, and Aaron Knott, the Department of Justice, who really worked for 3 hours immediately after the hearing to kind of come together and find agreement. If you recall, the main issue of concern was preservation of the attorney-client privilege, and we've done that to everyone's satisfaction, including the Oregon State Bar, who was most concerned about that issue. So we're both here for any further clarifications, if needed, on the -7 amendments.
Does anybody have any questions for Representative Bueller? Council? Okay.
Chair Barker, I move to adopt the -7 amendments to House Bill 4067.
Representative Leininger moves the -7 amendments in House Bill 4067. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections?
I would just note that it's kind of impressive that he pulled this off in a short session. Yes. It's a very good legislating representative.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It just wasn't me. It was truly everyone coming together. I got employment law 101 for 3 hours with some very very insightful attorneys. So it was it's not really – I was just the facilitator. It was their hard work and everyone really trying to come to a compromise that would benefit all of us with this bill. And certainly public employees and nonprofit employees.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so seeing no objections to the -7 amendments, move them into the bill.
Chair Barker, I move House Bill 4067 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Leininger moves House Bill 4067 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Again, any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. And Representative Bueller, will you carry the bill?
Yes, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your hard work on that. Next item on the agenda is House Bill, open a hearing on House Bill.
Work session.
Work session on House Bill 4075.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 4075 establishes the tip line on school safety. After a lot of work and effort after our last hearing, you now have the proposed -4 amendments. They expand the charge of the tip line to include reports from members of the community, not just reports from students. It specifies that tips are confidential rather than anonymous. It requires rules to be developed in consultation with state and local government behavioral health providers, and it updates the rulemaking charge to include relaying information on threats to local service providers and to school officials, not just to local law enforcement. It requires the tip line to be connected to other existing hotlines, and it specifies that when a referral is made, it should be tracked so we understand what outcomes are happening here. Additionally, we add members to the task force on school safety, and we extend the sunset on that task force to December 31st, 2019. We have light paperwork on this bill, and it has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Great. Thank you. Chair Barker, I move the dash 4 amendments to House Bill 4075.
Representative Leininger moves the dash 4 amendments in House Bill 4075. Is there a discussion? Yes, Representative Krieger.
Can staff tell us the difference between anonymous and confidential for this bill?
Certainly, Chair Barker. Rep. Krieger, for the purposes of this bill, a anonymous tip would be somebody who doesn't have to give their name or any identifying information. We want law enforcement or whomever is going to be contacted to be able to reach out to this person to, if they need to verify more information. So if you call, you might give a name and phone number that you can be reached at. That information is kept confidential. It's not shared. If it were anonymous, you wouldn't have to give a name or a phone number to be contacted at.
Any further discussion? Are there any objections? Dash 4s are in.
Chair Barker, I move House Bill 4075 as amended to Joint Ways and Means by prior reference.
To the floor.
To the floor.
And then to the committee.
And then to the committee on Joint Ways and Means. Sorry.
That's okay. Representative Leininger moves House Bill 4075 as amended to the floor to do pass recommendation with subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Again, any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Thank you. Open a work session on House Bill 4087.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 4087 is your bill that is solely here for the purposes of the proposed Dash 5 amendments. These allow a law enforcement officer or a law enforcement unit on behalf of an officer to file a petition with the circuit court on behalf of that officer to withhold that officer's personal information in cases where, by clear and convincing evidence, the officer can demonstrate a credible present threat to the life of the officer or immediate family. What's different about this particular amendment than in prior amendments is that the withholding period is for 90 days from the time when the court enters the order, with an allowance for additional extensions. We also address the procedure for obtaining an officer name when one of these protective orders is in place if there is a civil suit. It is ready to go with the Dash 5 amendments today.
Chair Barker, I move the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 4087.
Representative Leininger moves the Dash 5 amendments into House Bill 4087. Discussion? Yes, Representative.
Thank you. This is for counsel. Thank you, Chair. Can you give some examples of what clear and convincing evidence would be?
I believe in this case, Rep. Barker and Rep. Vega Peterson, clear and convincing evidence would be able to demonstrate I received this phone call at this time from a person saying, I am going to kill you and your family tomorrow. It can't be vague, and it can't be something that is less than an actual threat. Is that helpful?
Yes, thank you.
And it's not to stop disclosure of a name because of some embarrassing or newsworthy. This is for the true, really important. Somebody's under a very real threat. Representative Post.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make sure I'm getting what's the main difference between the Dash 3 and the Dash 5. You probably explained it, but maybe real slow for me.
Representative Post, the Dash 5 amendments allowed the withholding period to be for 90 days. The Dash 3 amendments allowed the withholding for 6 months.
Okay.
And that was a compromise worked out.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Are there any objections to the Dash 5 amendments? Dash 5 amendments are in.
Chair Barker, I move House Bill 4087 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Leininger moves House Bill 4087 with a Dash 5 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Again, are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. I will carry the bill. Open a work session on House Bill 4093.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 4093 is your courthouse fee bill. to generalize it. Before you today, you have the proposed Dash 7 amendments. These replace the measure and start afresh. It allows a presiding judge of a judicial district to impose a surcharge on parking and traffic violations only if the county receives 11Q bond proceedings for county courthouse repair or replacement or debts related to such bonds. It requires county commissioners to suggest the amount of the surcharge, but no more than $5 per fine, and requires the Chief Justice approve of the surcharge. It requires a copy of the order for the surcharge to be delivered to the state court administrator by July 1 of each year for application in the following year. So I'm going to clarify that again. The request would have to be made July 1 for a fee that would take effect on January 1 of the following year. It allows use of the funds from the surcharge to be for payment of capital costs on courthouse projects or debts related to such projects, and it provides direction to the county treasurer on administration of the monies collected, makes conforming changes, and maintains the emergency clause. The paperwork is here for this to go to Ways and Means with the Dash 7 amendments.
Chair Barker, I move the Dash 7 amendments be adopted to House Bill 4093.
Representative Langer moves the Dash 7 amendments in the House Bill 4093. Is there any discussion? Representative Greenlee, please.
I understand this takes out the civil.
Correct.
Whatever it was called.
Yeah, the civil filing fees.
Oh. Okay.
Representative Krieger.
Chair, was it 2712 where we'd made some fee adjustments a couple sessions ago, trying to get these fees in line a little bit, because it was getting everybody's brother had a fee on there. Pretty soon, where it was started out with $2, and all of a sudden it's up to 20 some dollars of fees. Is this the same thing?
Okay. Go ahead.
Chair Barker and Rep Krieger, I would suggest we have someone from OJD who could come give us a little bit of background on the prior work on fees on this issue.
And Mr. Chair, perhaps Mr. Landon, who's going to discuss this, not just the prior work on fees. I'd love to hear in your remarks, if not inconvenient, if you could address perhaps future work on fees that might be anticipated.
Be glad to. Phil Lemon from the Oregon Judicial Department, Chair Barker, Rep. Krieger. In the 2011 session, the Legislative Assembly, on both the civil filing fee side and on the offense side, which includes crimes and violations, went toward a policy to have a single fee that is distributed behind the scenes. And so on the civil side with filing fees, the legislature eliminated many of the motion and additional fees. It eliminated county authority to impose surcharges for law libraries and mediation services. That was all built into a filing fee and distributed back to the counties through the legislative appropriations process. Same thing on the offense side. The legislature reduced the overall amount, but instead of the various assessments and surcharges, consolidated those into the presumptive fine, which is a single dollar amount presented to the person cited. And then once it's collected, it's distributed again by statutory formula and through the legislative process.
Now, this by that you mean the Ways and Means process?
Mr. Chair, Rep. Greenlick, yes.
These fees that we have then proposed are, the way the bill is written, is for Multnomah County only?
Or Mr. Chair, Rep. Krieger, no. At this point, there are three counties that have been authorized by the legislature for bonds to replace their courthouses: Multnomah, Jefferson, and Tillamook.
So those counties could use this bill to raise county revenues for the purpose of the courthouse?
Mr. Chair, Rep. Krieger, I believe the answer is yes, if they choose.
Representative Springer.
thank you, Mr. Chair. So I want to follow up on that. Then may we assume that 2 years down the road, when other counties, if other counties have the ability to get some bonding capacity, they also could impose these fees, or they have to impose these fees, or they're not allowed to?
Mr. Chair, Rep. Springer, this is discretionary authority, and the amendments have list what the requirements are, the principal among them being the county has been authorized for state bond funding for a replacement project. Those projects are approved by the legislature. Right now, I am working with the Association of Oregon Counties to kind of get an inventory of what counties are interested in doing that. That recommendation comes to the Chief Justice, and in his recommended budget proposes using state bonds for approved projects.
And Mr. Fick, you might want to come up, too, in case you have any questions.
So Lane County is back in this session to request funding, and we have other counties who are in various stages in line to request bond funding. But as long as they meet the requirements of this legislation, then the county commission could ask the presiding judge to impose a surcharge on offenses adjudicated in the circuit court, and then that would help generate revenue that go to the county to support their bonds and debts.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Barton.
I defer to Representative
Krieger. Okay, Representative Krieger, please go ahead.
These other counties could do this in the future if they get the bonding authority.
Mr. Chair, Rep. Krieger, in broad terms, any county that is getting or has been authorized to get state bond funding for a courthouse replacement project would be able to discuss with their presiding judge about imposing a surcharge on parking and traffic offenses. Yes.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
This is one of these times when a lot of us are torn about what to do. But I can remember in sitting with Senator Burdick, over at a meeting over here, I think it was in 2001 or 2002, talking about the need for courthouses and how bad it was in Multnomah County. If that thing comes down, we've got a real problem. And it's going to take new money. That's what it amounts to. It's going to take new money. Existing funds can't be scraped off enough to build this. I don't know, what did I hear? There was $700 or $800 million worth of courthouses need to be done. And so it's going to take somebody, whether it be us, I guess it's us, isn't it, that has to make the final decision where and what form will generate the funds in the years to come to pay for it. From these assessments on tickets might be more appropriate than some type of fees to access the courts. So I may not care for it, but I don't know what other options we have. We have to replace them. If anybody in this room or sitting up here can show me some other source of dollars that's more just, boy, tell me.
We'll clear cut your forest.
Already did that.
Yes, Representative Barton.
Thank you, Chair Barker. So the bill before us essentially authorizes it delegates authority to authorize a surcharge on tickets, essentially. However, of course, the original bill involved a similar authority for a filing fee, document filing fee. That's obviously been amended out. It certainly has caused some discussion around here. My understanding, and I'd love it if you could address this, is that there's going to be a work group moving forward, because I understand that there's discussion, for example, of a filing fee statewide to finance e-court, and that perhaps courthouse construction and other capital needs might be a part of this discussion. Can you tell me if there is a work group planned, and if so, who will be a part of that work group?
Mr. Chair, Rep. Barton, you're about two steps ahead of where we are right now. Mm. As I think I mentioned in my previous testimony, the Judicial Department will be bringing forth a package for in the 17th session to fund primarily the e-filing activities through Oregon E-Court. Oregon E-Court, for those of you who have not been through the various briefings and hearings on this issue, we are totally changing our automated system. And so we're basically going to an electronic courthouse. One of the major services that we provide to the bar and others is electronic filing of documents. And our vendor charges us every time somebody e-files. And so in discussions in 2013 and 14, the major stakeholders, including the bar and the trial lawyers and the Association of Defense Counsel and others, wanted to fund those activities through a filing fee increase rather than a transaction-based increase. And so next biennium will be time to talk about that again. Part of that discussion will be user fees that Judicial Department has for people who use bulk data or businesses who subscribe to get court data. And the other thing we will be looking at is fines for offenses, because by statute, The Judicial Department provides much of these services and information to the public safety system in particular, but Department of Justice, indigent defense attorneys, sheriff's offices, district attorneys, at no charge. And so what we will be doing, what we are planning to do, is put together a package of revenue to support that system. At this point, I would say it's going to include all three of those issues. By statute, the Chief Justice on the user fee side is required to notify stakeholders and take comment, but I think we will proceed with a broader base group and cover all three of those. We have not specifically talked about expanding that group to cover courthouse construction costs, but if the legislature would like us to do that, then we can probably do that.
May I follow up, Mr. Chair?
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Lemon. While the legislature has not instructed the judiciary to do so by statute, I think it would be fair to say that the legislature has certainly contemplated that work group may well consider filing fees. You know, I don't think it's any secret that a surcharge on tickets is not going to meet our capital needs of the next generation as we replace the courthouses, not just Multnomah, but really the series of courthouses that were constructed in the Great Depression and have served us very well, but were only designed to last 75 to 100 years. And as we think about how we're going to do that, we all recognize that E-Court and making that a sustainable system is a part of that. But it is at least plausible that I think filing fees could well be a component to the solution. And again, in the last week or two, as we discussed this, I think I, with some of my colleagues in both parties, have at least contemplated that stakeholders should at least contemplate that in addition to it. So that filing fees were consistent statewide, but also created some kind of statewide source of money that could be used to at least finance part of the capital construction needs for courthouses, not just in Multnomah, but really for the courthouses beyond Multnomah. But again, I think it would be prudent to discuss it. Otherwise, I suspect this issue will continue to arise in the legislature in the next several years.
Mr. Chair, Rep. Barton, just one quick thing. When the legislature did the big revision in 2011, mm-hmm. there was an incremental increase in fines to generate a revenue stream to the criminal fines account that is appropriated to the Judicial Department for courthouse improvements. Mm-hmm. So those are things like, for example, in Curry County, they needed a roof. It was leaking. They had no money to do it. So we used the funds for those type of improvements. The bond funding and the 50-50 split was initiated in 2013, and there was no specific funding source attached to that. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of the next step of that evolving conversation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when we initially looked at this bill, I had a fair amount of heartburn on the fact that the surcharge seemed overwhelmingly bent towards people filing for different actions in the system. And oftentimes, they're only access to justice, not always, but oftentimes. So I'm happy to see that out, but now we're talking about violations of speeding tickets, failure to obey a traffic control device, that kind of thing, and parking tickets are already extraordinary. I work hard not to get them. That said, initially I asked this question when we first heard this bill, why we're not looking at criminal fees, and I was given the answer that, you know, it's a clean slate thing, give people an opportunity to have less of a burden. But when we're talking about $5 on a parking ticket, I'm thinking, why, unless I've missed something here, why are we still leaving out one of the biggest users of the courthouse?
Chair Barker, Representative Springer.
Identify yourself.
I'm sorry?
Identify yourself.
I'm Chris Fick with Multnomah County. Thank you. I think the primary reason is we want to have a larger discussion in the interim about the civil and criminal components. And while Mr. Lemon just referenced the desire to have a discussion around E-Court, we think that it would be prudent to expand that to both civil and criminal if the legislature deems it worthy of discussion. There simply wasn't time in this short session, and you heard our concerns about putting criminal in, and we heard that from legislators coming into this session, to entertain both suddenly at the same time.
Thank you for that answer. I've still got some serious concerns because of that element.
Representative Greenwood.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I have a comment rather than a question. I think I'm a little unhappy that the filing fee charge is taken out by this amendment. We're talking about a courthouse that absolutely needs replacement and it needs it faster than we're going to do it. If we have an M8.5 earthquake off the Oregon coast, several thousand people will die in that building if it happens at a time where the courthouse is open. It's really a catastrophe and ready to happen. The county has to put up 50% of the funds. The other 50% will come in the state bonding. The county needs to find ways to fund that in general funds, although maybe one of our members here will be at the county commission next year and be able to take care of it, but I think it's going to be a really big problem. And I think this is, the purpose of this is to provide a relatively small piece, I don't remember what the proportion is, but a relatively small piece of the county's financial obligation to get that courthouse. That courthouse needs to move, and it needs to move as fast as we can before it starts moving on its own right. I support this amendment and support the bill, but I'm sorry that it's not a bigger piece, and we'll have to find some more money in the county level.
Okay, and I'd also like to thank the state police for working on this with the trying to come up. There was at one point kind of a moving dollar amount, which they can't handle electronically, so they said it, and Representative Olson worked with them to come up with a number that made as much sense as possible, and so I appreciate that effort as well. So thank you very much.
So, Mr. Chair, before we move forward,
please go ahead.
Do you mind if we take a short little recess?
Committee stand at ease. Or, committee come back to order. We have the amendment before us.
The
dash seven amendments. Are there any objections to the dash seven amendments going in the bill? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4093 as amended to the floor with a new pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the committee, the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Leininger moves House Bill 4093 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendations.
4093.
With subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee, is there any further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Rep Greenland?
Aye.
Rep Krieger?
Aye.
Rep Post?
No.
Rep Springer?
No.
Megan Peterson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Leininger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
No.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Spence?
No carrier.
No carrier. Open a work session on House Bill 4123. We're not doing that. Okay. As disregard. Yeah, that was different. Open a work session on House Bill 4142.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 4142, the underlying bill prohibits a person performing private security services from wearing a uniform, badge, or utilizing a vehicle that causes a reasonable person to believe the person provides firefighting, police, ambulance, or emergency medical services. Rep. Springer has proposed the dash three amendments, and they are ready to go today, Representative Springer. Those amendments would make it unlawful for an entity that employs private security officers to use a name that implies the entity is or is affiliated with an existing law enforcement unit, public safety agency, armed forces, or federal agency, and provides rulemaking authority to the board to develop these. The dash three amendment exempt entities that are currently in operation, so they provide a grandfather clause for folks who are already doing business under one of these names. This is ready to move with the dash three amendments.
Okay.
Chair Barker, I move to adopt the dash three amendments to House Bill 4142.
Representative Leininger moves the dash three amendments into House Bill 4142. Is there any discussion, Representative Springer? Please.
Thank you. And I want to thank Representative Gorsuch for allowing this in down in Albany. There's a company that has had the word police in their name, and to my knowledge, there's not been an abuse of that. If there is, then there needs to be a complaint filed on that. And when we're talking about somebody that has a fleet of a dozen or more vehicles, uniforms, letterheads, signs, we're talking tens of thousands of dollars for not doing anything wrong. So I certainly appreciate the chair and Representative Gorsuch and this amendment. All it does is grandfather companies like that out. It does not allow them to sell their name to somebody else and take advantage of this grandfather clause.
Yes. Does the amendment take into account the other elements, the badge, the uniform, the other things, or is it only about the name?
Chair Barker and Representative Greenlee, it is only about the name.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Any objections to the Dastrey amendments?
Chair Barker, I move House Bill 4142 as amended to the floor with a Ducasse recommendation.
Representative Leininger moves House Bill 4142 as amended to the floor with a Ducasse recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered, and we'll have Representative Gorsuch Curie.
Okay. We're ready.
Open work session on House Bill 4147.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 4147 prohibits a gun dealer from transferring handgun to a purchaser without a unique approval number from the Department of State Police. You have before you the Dash 8 amendments, which allow for the transfer of firearm if 10 business days have passed without approval. Additionally, expands the reporting requirements of the Department of State Police when it determines an attempted transfer was made by a person prohibited from possessing the firearm. It requires notification to the U.S. Attorney, the District Attorney in the jurisdiction, and local law enforcement agencies. It requires the report within 24 hours of that determination, unless it would compromise an ongoing investigation. And it requires an annual report on attempted purchases that is prohibited from possessing the firearm. It specifies that firearm does not include power-actuated devices or construction tools. This is ready to move with the Dash 8s.
Chair Barker, I move to adopt the Dash 8 amendments to House Bill 4147.
Representative Leininger moves to adopt the Dash 8 amendments to House Bill 4147. Is there a discussion on the Dash 8s?
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not going to discuss the Dash 5s at this point, but I will be a no on the Dash 8s. And then I do want to discuss the Dash 5s that I've had drafted and have been posted on OLIS since, I believe, yesterday.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm going to be a no on this, too, as well, because I get the idea behind what this is all about, the additional onerous efforts that are being placed on gun dealers and the Oregon State Police specifically on this. I don't see anything at all that suggests or recommends that we try to do something to beef up the Oregon State Police handgun unit in this whole thing. I mean, if you're going to be really effective, you need to be doing that. I don't see that.
There is a movement for that and a promise from the Speaker's office that there will be more money going to the Oregon State Police records check unit. And we'll put that, I'll say that again.
Okay. Yeah. But again, then.
It doesn't say that's, it
that. Yeah, okay. That's verbal. Yeah. I'm not seeing that in
okay.
this.
I get that.
And if that had been the case, then we should have shot this down to Ways and Means.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would basically just echo that. He said what I was going to say. I'm more of a fan of the Dash 5, and I'd like to go that direction. But the Dash 8, again, I love our Oregon State Police and constantly support them. But I'm afraid that without some kind of extra funding and extra manpower, this is not something that they can deal with right now. And so I would be opposed to the Dash 8.
Okay. Representative Greenick, do you?
No, I'm fine.
Any further discussion? We have a motion to push put the Dash 8 into the Bill 4147. Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Rep. Greenland?
Aye.
Rep. Krieger?
No.
Rep. Post?
No.
Rep. Springer?
No.
Rep. Nega Peterson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Leininger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
No.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries. The eights are in. Representative Springer, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just briefly want to talk about the Dash 5 amendments and then make a motion on those. The Dash 5s do three things in particular. Last week, whatever day it was, when we had 3 hours of testimony down in room 50, I heard, and I made mention at that time, I heard no less than a dozen times, and I think that that's incredibly conservative, about domestic violence victims. And so I walked away, and the harm that can be caused to domestic violence victims. And so I walked away from that, and I thought about that, and I thought what to do. And I think that what the Dash 5s do in a way is address that need. I said at the time I would hate the idea of a domestic violence victim going in because they felt they were equipped and needed to have some kind of a gun and not be able to get it because there was a backlog in the system and just couldn't get return. So it addresses that. It also, and that specifically talks about domestic violence cases as far as restraining orders. Also, this has nothing to do with how long the gun is to be held, but there was very clear that there's an issue. Don't know whose fault it is. I don't think that's a necessarily relevant part of the conversation, but it takes a long time oftentimes to get these cases resolved. So this has nothing to do with the time in which the gun is released. This has to do with giving the state police at least an initial deadline of 45 days to investigate instances of declines or when the background check isn't going through. And then the third piece, if you're going to say you thou shall for do something, it is talks about adding resources. So I would make a motion to adopt the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 4147.
Representative Springer makes a motion to introduce the Dash 5 amendments into House Bill 4147 discussion. So I would ask Representative on the domestic violence victim. So if the domestic violence, does this allow a felon to get the gun if the woman is the victim?
It doesn't change who can have access to a gun. This was specifically the testimony was about Black Friday. You go in and you can't get a check and you can't get a check and you can't get a check. Change state law to where that would not be impacting domestic violence victims.
How would that work? So you go in and you go in to buy a gun and there's a mm-hmm. hour wait or something. Do you get
you know
to go
what?
Ahead of the line?
I would love to get LC up here if you would like to chat about that, or maybe staff can, to give a little more clarity, because we also have a federal law that we're dealing with. And so I'd love to chat more about that so we can have clarity on that if you want. That's totally up to you, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
And if there is a domestic violent victim under the other bill that was passed last session, 941, in exigent circumstances, you don't need to do a background check. I could give you a gun, for example, without a background check if you were a victim of domestic violence and needed a gun.
Now, does that impact the federal law, though?
No.
Okay. Certainly, if we want
I
more clarification
okay.
on that, I'd love to talk
and
about that, too.
So the Dash Ace that we had introduced provide for 10 days, and this would lengthen it out to 45 days?
No. As I said, and counsel, please, if I misspeak, catch me, because the last thing I want to do is misspeak. This does not impact the time frame in which a gun is or is not released. Okay? Does not impact that whatsoever. This says to the state police, investigations need to be completed in 45 days. And I'm seeing a head nod, I just wanted to make sure I clarified that, because we heard over and over that oftentimes people are waiting 6 months and don't know anything, but yet they could go in a few days after the first non-answer and get a gun. And so this simply tells the state police you need to move quicker. But they need resources.
This is telling them, the other one tells them. Okay, Representative Barton.
Mr. Chair and Representative Springer, I'm now confused, and I'm hoping I can get clarity from Council or LC or anyone else.
Council will probably be the
right
one.
Or perhaps you guys.
Well, I hope so too.
But and forgive me, because I didn't realize the dash fives were being moved today, so I'm just now reading them. And I candidly admit, as I read them, I thought it also extended to 45 days. I gather I read it incorrectly. It's easy to do when you're looking at it when it's not engrossed. So my first question, I'm hoping perhaps Council can explain the dash fives to me. My second question would be, the dash eights have now been adopted, and are the dash fives and the dash eights harmonious? Would it one supplant the other, or could they both be adopted? Because much of what you're
conflict.
I see.
Okay. And Chair Barker, Rep. Barton. So what the dash fives are doing is saying that under no circumstances may the department take more than 45 days to make a determination. And this falls within, if more than 30 minutes have passed and we can't figure out if they are qualified or disqualified, that total length of time you have to get something resolved is 45 days. Under the current statute, the firearm can be released whether or not it's resolved. So that part is not touched. This says you must complete that investigation and make your determination within 45 days. So the firearm may still be released at the discretion of the dealer or the store owner, but OSP has to finish their work on it within 45 days. They're together but separate. They're two different elements, but they're very closely related.
May I ask a follow-up question, Mr. Chair? Thank you, Council. Again, I appreciate it. I'm sorry as I wade through this. Now, can you explain to me why those are in conflict? For example, one extending from 3 days to 10 and versus the mandate at 45. It seems to me that those could be done simultaneously, just like existing law 3 and 45 could be done. Did that make sense?
Chair Barker, Rep. Barton, I would need to look at them side by side to see whether they are in fact in conflict, mm-hmm. but there are other portions of the measure that make it very difficult to have the two of them coexisting. Okay. So that particular section we might be able to put together, but the rest of the measure we would need to lay out side by side, and I have not done that analysis yet.
Sorry to throw it on you.
It's okay.
I have a question.
Yes.
Okay, so thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question, and perhaps Representative Springer could help me or Council. When I was reading, just one thing that I'm not completely fully sure on, would a victim be able to get a firearm from a dealer only? The way I'm reading this, it wouldn't be a private party sale. Is private party sale included in this?
Private party's covered under 941.
Yeah, private party's already covered under existing.
315.
Well,
yeah. And okay. Chair Barker and Representative Post, I believe this section only applies to gun dealers.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I would love to chat with LC because that was never part of my conversation. 941 is law. Everybody does a background check, private sale or not. And so I didn't even talk about that. So I would hope that it's consistent with current state law.
Chair Parker, members of the committee, Jessica Minifee from Legislative Council. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have. I'm happy to chat with anybody in private, just everyone.
Could you clarify that? What was the Post?
Yeah, Representative Post question. Can you address that?
Chair Barker and Representative Springer and Representative Post, I think your question had to do with whether or not the amendment would apply to private gun sales. And what I basically just did was I applied the provision of 166.412, which is really speaking up to dealer sales, and just added the same provisions to the private sale that is basically facilitated by a gun dealer. So the same situation applies in both scenarios. Okay.
Just a small follow. Okay, the reason I asked that was, and I did not bring this up at all during our long evening's hearing because I didn't feel it was proper to bring it up because we had so many people from the public that were here to talk, and I wanted them to talk. I didn't want to talk. I had, and this is why I am liking what I'm reading so far of this dash five, and the reason I brought that question up. I received an email during the interim from a young lady who make a long story short, has a restraining order on her ex-husband. She is in a witness protection type program that apparently not even Oregon State police officers that I've talked to in the building have ever heard of. She sent me the backside of the card that she has. So basically, to keep her safe, her mail goes to a post office box in a white envelope, all the mail. She is then, they re-deliver the mail to the home where she is under this protective program. Now, I tell you all that to say that because on her driver's license is a P.O. box that is at a post office, she cannot get a background check. So she is in serious danger from this ex-husband who has threatened her life. So I don't know how much it ties in with what Representative Springer is working on here, but it's been a concern that's been in the back of my mind since, I think, October when it first came to my mind or to my light. And I've been very, very concerned about it. This lady has been continually emailing me with her concern. She can't get a gun, yet she has a man who's threatening her life, yet she has a restraining order on him, so he can't go near her. Yet we all know that men break restraining orders all the time. So how can we address her? That was what I wanted to talk about that night, but again, it was just the wrong moment.
Ask counsel, do you know anything? What could be done with somebody just has a post office box? Somebody could, in those circumstances, another person, for example, you, Representative Post, could loan her a gun if you wanted to, without a background check.
And that's what I thought, I just wasn't positive.
But I don't know
what, that was so confusing.
I don't know how you would get to a dealer with that. I'm not sure what the state police rules are in that. So I don't know if you'd know that either.
Chair Barker, Representative Post, I remember looking into this issue a few weeks ago. Off the top of my head, I don't want to state a conclusion because I don't remember fully the answer. It had to do something with if you have a P.O. box, if you have some other way of verifying your address, I think that is sufficient to get a
See, and that's her
check.
Problem. She can't.
So she doesn't have, an electric bill or anything?
No, everything goes to a white envelope in a P.O. box. Then they take it out of the white envelope, and they at the post office mail her mail to where she actually lives. It's a really weird situation. Like I said, state police don't even know about it.
Yeah. Okay. Representative Vega Peterson.
Okay, so I had a couple questions because I'm also trying to understand the different parts of the amendment. So is this saying that so if there's no results after 30 minutes, then it's directing the state police to finish their investigation in 45 days? Is there, what happens if it's not done in 45 days? Is there anything in the amendment that speaks to that?
Rep. Vega Peterson, no, there's not. And again, it's the determination of whether the person is qualified or disqualified that must take 45 days. Mm-hmm. And there's still, after that certain time period, the 3 days, the dealer could still sell the gun to the person.
Okay. So they could. And then is there any more money or funding for the Oregon State Police to ensure that the termination could be made in the 45 days in the bill, in the amendment?
May I, Mr. Chair? That's on page 3 lines, well, page 2, the last two lines on page 3. It is talking about additional appropriation to the Oregon State Police. The number is not filled in because it's not in Ways and Means. Could I also address 30 minutes? This amendment doesn't talk about 30 minutes.
But if the department...
I just want to be clear where we're at on that piece.
Yes.
Because I also heard 30 days. Just want to be consistent.
Excuse me. Representative Springer, under subsection E, it says if the department is unable to determine if the transfer is qualified or disqualified from completing the transfer within 30 minutes, the department shall notify the gun dealer and provide the gun dealer with an estimate of time for when the department will provide the requested information.
Thank you. Wanted to clarify.
Okay, and then I also had a question about how this would react with Senate Bill 941 and the piece which says if somebody's in, there's no background check required if somebody's in imminent danger. Is this you know, because then there's no background check necessary. But
I'll take a shot at that. A gun dealer won't pass a gun out without a background check.
That was my point that I was trying to make. So I could lend.
I don't. I don't believe. I mean, you could tell that. I don't believe a gun dealer can skip a background check.
Because I think it has to do with transfers of gun, which could include sales. So how does that work? Okay.
Chair Barker, Representative Vega Peterson. This amendment is really speaking to someone who's walking into a gun dealer shop to buy a firearm from the gun dealer, or somebody who is doing the background check through the gun dealer. If there is a true emergency and a domestic violence victim wants to obtain a gun from another private party because they have imminent fear of personal safety, they wouldn't even approach the gun dealer to do the background check. They would be able to just go directly to that person and have the gun for the duration of the danger.
Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Council. Is there forgive me for being unprepared for this dash five, is there a fiscal impact associated with the 45-day mandate?
Chair Barker, Representative Barton, we have not gotten a fiscal impact statement on this amendment.
Has one been requested?
Not yet.
May I address that, Mr. Chair? Fiscal impact statement would also be, part of that would be impacted by the blank line on the back.
I'm sorry, the what?
Where it talks about the appropriation on the back.
I enjoy the conversation, but if you go back and look at 941, 4147, dash 8, dash 5, none of it would have affected any of these shootings that we've had in Oregon around the country. We continue to go down the same track, and we're not making any progress. I just brought a piece in here to Representative Grinda. Can I have that for a minute? And it's, I went to all of you. I bet you most of you didn't read it. Milliken Matthew, and it has to do with mental health and guns and why it's so hard to get the job done. We're struggling, and we're looking for a simple answer, and there isn't any. And like I said, we can come in here and continue to pass these bills, and it's not going to have an effect until we really identify what's causing some of this. And I don't think we've done a very good job of doing that. We pass legislation real quick. We come in here, there's hardly any conversation with a work group or a task force about what it is we're trying to do. Now, Representative Lineker, Representative Olson, myself met with Jenny Burdick for, an hour and a half one day, trying to wrap our hands around this a little bit, clear back in November, I believe, and we wanted to develop a bill for now. What did we find? We just didn't have the time to do it, and we started in November. If we're really genuine, and it's not D versus R, or anti-gun versus pro-gun, at some point, somebody in this building has got to settle everybody down and say, hey, let's have a work group or a task force and get the right people in there. You may come up with a thing that there is nothing we can do. It's part of the new society. I hope that isn't the answer.
I just thank you. I just want to add the one last thing about the situation that I was talking about with this woman who has emailed me. One of the problems was she's in a family situation of a, I don't even remember what religious group it is, but nobody in her family, nobody in her sphere of influence has a firearm. And so she was reaching out to me. Well, I'm not going to put myself in that position. So I don't think 941 covers that situation. I don't think this helps in that situation. So I still have a lady who lives in my district who is fearing for her life, not able to get a firearm because she can't go to a dealer, and nobody in her family or what's described under 941 gives her the ability to find a firearm. And I'm truly concerned for her, and I have been since we started talking about this, and I don't know what to do about that. There has to be some way to address that. And so maybe to Representative Krieger's point, if we would really sit down with a serious work group and task force and work these things through. Sorry, that wasn't a question.
That's okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
It is a fact that his situation, we would have to make a statute change in the background check saying that if there is a restraining order, something of that nature, then that person would be relieved of the address responsibility.
Okay, well, the only thing I'll add to this, and I don't want to take away from Representative Springer's at all, because I'm very happy, but the dash six actually discusses that. That's what the dash six is all about. It lists who, again, could transfer in a situation like what I just described, how it could happen. And that the onus would be on then, if I decided to transfer a gun to that lady, the onus is on me if anything happens. I'm in trouble if anything happens. And so that's why I put up the dash six.
I'm going to recess the committee for 5 minutes.
Mr. Chair, I ask for recess, and maybe your Democratic colleagues could have a moment.
We could go in this corner over here.
Were you in here already, or did you hear us descend into chaos and run up? Thank you. I'm sure you always enjoy it.
Committee, come back to order.
We're on the motion to adopt the dash fives.
We have a motion before us to introduce the Dash 5 amendments into House Bill 4147. Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
No.
Rep. Greenland?
No.
Rep. Krieger?
Yes.
Rep. Post?
Yes.
Rep. Springer?
Yes.
Rep. Vega Peterson?
No.
Vice Chair Leininger?
No.
Vice Chair Olson?
Yes.
Chair Barker?
No. Motion failed. Motion failed.
I would have broke his arm for you.
Wow.
We have
Chair Barker, I move 4147 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Leininger moves House Bill 4147 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any more discussion? Probably no objections. Call the roll, please.
Representative Bart?
Aye.
Rep. Greenlick?
Aye.
Rep. Krieger?
No.
Rep. Post?
No.
Rep. Springer?
No.
Rep. Vega Peterson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Leininger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
No.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries. We'll have Representative Williamson will be the carrier.
Mr. Chair?
I'm sorry, yes.
I'd like to serve notice of possible minority report.
Thank you, Representative. And
you add me to that.
Okay. Representative Olson and Representative Springer, give notice of minority report. Thank you for the notice. Any further business before the committee?
Mr. Chair and committee, I know I will be absent all next week. I have to go for work.
Should have been absent today.
Killing me.
And there will be no meeting on Monday. The meeting will not meet on Monday. The Senate, for some reason, is a little slow getting the business done.
So we're not meeting Monday?
We are not meeting Monday. We stand adjourned. Thank you, committee. Meeting Monday. We stand adjourned. Thank you, committee. We are